The following podcast is sponsored by Financial Sense Wealth Management. To learn more about our investment services, go to financialsense.com or give us a call at 888-486-3939.
We're doing this interview on Tuesday, April 14th, and normally April 15th, which would be Wednesday, would be the time of the year that you would be filing your income tax return. Well, as a result of the coronavirus, those deadlines for filing your tax return have now been extended to July 15th for 2019. So if you're in the process of getting that together and you're thinking you have to get this done by tomorrow, that's been extended, along with any taxes that are due at that time. Usually the way the IRS works, when you file for an extension, as long as you've paid your taxes that are due, there are no penalties. Well, they are going to extend that now till July 15th. So you have to July 15th to file your tax return, and you also have to July 15th to pay any taxes if they are due. However, I do want to point out, if you are computing your taxes, maybe you're doing TurboTax, you're working with a tax advisor, and you have a refund coming, you don't want to wait to July 15th to file your tax return. Please file your tax return as soon as possible, which would be now, so that you can get your refund check sent to you. And by the way, if you do it electronically, those refund checks will get to you much faster. So the good news is the IRS is helping people out because, you know, you might have been furloughed from your job. Some people have been laid off as a result of these government shutdowns. And we know that makes it much more difficult for people to pay their taxes, file their returns. Well, there's a little bit of relief coming from the IRS. And we're going to talk about some other things that have gone into effect as a result of the coronavirus shutdown and quarantine that much of us find ourselves throughout the country. Let's talk about something else that normally comes around this time. For those of you that are filing your 2019 tax return, normally if you are contributing to an IRA and are basically you are allowed to contribute to an IRA because based on whether you get a pension or certain levels of income, they may phase that out. But your IRA contributions, Roth contributions, HSA accounts, all of those have been extended to July 15th. For example, if you're going to put an IRA contribution, that's normally $6,000, it's $7,000 if you're over age 50. So that's $7,000. You do not have to make that contribution this week or April 15th. You now have until July 15th to make those IRA contributions. You don't have to be sick from coronavirus to file for filing extensions. In fact, there is the possibility that you can extend if you have a difficult tax return that's complex. As long as you pay your taxes due by July 15th, you can file for an extension to October 15th, and you don't have to worry about any penalties or interest if your taxes are paid by July 15th. So basically what they're doing here is to get us through this tough time where, let's say, a lot of people have been furloughed from their jobs or in some cases maybe laid off. They have given you an extra 3 months in which to file your tax return, make your pension contributions like IRA and Roth's, health savings accounts. And why those are important, those are deductions that come off. Those are called above-line deductions. They come off the front page of your tax return. And why that's important, because when you get down to adjusted gross income, that's the figure at the bottom of the front page of your tax return. A lot of your itemized deductions sometimes will be based on what your adjusted gross income is, for example, medical expenses. So it's very, very important. You now have an extra 3 months if you are in one of those situations. Either your business has been shut down as a result of government quarantine, you're applying for, let's say, a payroll extension program where the government is going to come in, help you meet payroll, and loan you money for up to 10 weeks, and that's about 2.5 months. The one thing I want to point out is they've already run out of money. So Congress right now is working on an additional $250 billion. So the total package for this payroll extension, basically the government says, if you use this money to meet payroll, keep workers employed, if you use it to pay rent or expenses of operating your business, they will be considered a grant and forgiven. So they're now working on an additional $250 billion. There's some political jockeying around with Nancy Pelosi and some things that she wants, but hopefully they're going to get that extra $250 billion. So what they're really trying to do here is get people through this quarantine and this shutdown where businesses are shut down, people are furloughed, and the IRS is complying with that by allowing you to extend the time of filing. Now, here's something you also might want to consider. If you are in a situation where, for example, you have a tax refund coming, well, under those circumstances, you want to get your tax return filed right away because they're not holding back and the IRS is working overtime to make sure that if somebody has a refund, they can get those refund checks to you. So if you have gone through your normal preparation to file your tax return in your accountant, or maybe you're using TurboTax and you actually have a tax refund coming and could use the money, then by all means, don't wait till July 15th. File your tax return and do it electronically, which is faster in terms of getting your refund check. So that's another thing that has happened. Also, if you've had penalties, for example, you've had to tap into a pension plan or an IRA, penalties for early withdrawal have been extended to July 15th. Also, if you are, let's say, retired, or let's say you have outside income, you have a job, but you have a substantial portfolio that produces interest income, taxable dividends, and you have to make estimated payments, those estimated tax payments, which would normally be due around April 15th, have been extended to July 15th, but not for the second quarter. So basically, what you would normally pay April 15th, you can pay July 15th, but your normal July 15th payment would also be due on July 15th. Now, some good news in order to keep social distancing. Audits by the IRS, new audits, they're not going to do anything before July 15th. They're also going to suspend in-person audits. So, you know, just like you have telemedical, you may have teleaudit now. So you might get on Zoom or Skype and talk to your friendly IRS agent. But these are just a number of deadlines and extensions that have gone into effect. And folks, if we keep this quarantine going beyond May, as may be the case in certain areas where the pandemic has hit the hardest, you know, I'm thinking of places like New York, Seattle, Washington, and places like that, we may even have an extension. And from the things that I'm reading, and we're going to try to get a medical expert. The problem is the medical experts are so overloaded right now. We had one scheduled for this week out of New York, but they are just overwhelmed right now. They're exhausted. You've got people that are working, you know, 16, 18, 24-hour days. As you can imagine, the number of beds and the number of patients that they're having to deal with. But anyway, the good news is taxes have been extended for payments to July 15th, along with pension contributions, penalties, and all those things have been extended as well. Some good news if you are maybe a little stressed out because of things that have hit you as a result of being furloughed, or maybe you've been laid off. And so we're also going to try to get somebody here to talk about the extension of unemployment claims. They've been extended as a result of the CARES Act up to 39 weeks, and then also an additional $600 per week on unemployment benefits. So we'll try to get that here on the program for you and keep you up to date. But hopefully this helps. And now we're going to talk to our tax expert, Chris Hennessy. That's coming up next. Joining me on the program is Chris Hennessy. He is part of Putnam's Business Advisory Group, and he's a professor at Babson College. Chris, I want to begin our program. December 23rd of last year, under late hours of the night, they passed a major bill affecting pensions, retirement, and kind of slipped that through.
Right.
And there are a lot of implications to this bill. I want to start there so that people really understand the full implications of what happened in December.
Sure, Jim. So we haven't had changes to the retirement area for some time. And basically what happened, most of this bill is pretty favorable. Helps people save more in retirement plans, helps small business owners set up those plans. But the major change that people should be aware of is so-called stretch IRA, I call it, has been curtailed. So what that means is, under old law, a non-spouse beneficiary inherited an IRA account. Mostly it would be children, but non-spouse beneficiary. They could take a little bit out each year based on their age. A 23-year-old has about a 60-year life expectancy. So, Jim, the first year they take 1/60th out of the IRA and just keep going. Well, that now, for the most part, is gone. There are some exceptions. And in that same example, the 23-year-old would begin a 10-year clock. And at the end of that 10 years, the entire IRA would have to be distributed in income tax. Now, you could take out money as you go along, but the big blunt move here, and the one that's going to impact people, is at the end of the 10 years. So everyone's got to rethink their planning, their estate planning, who they name as beneficiaries, and so forth. That's the big change.
Yeah, Chris, that would strike me as, if you're fortunate enough where, you work for a company, they were matching contributions, and you have a seven-figure rollover. I mean, we have clients that have $3 million, and let's say that your son is a doctor, another one is very successful. This could have a very serious income tax problem that you create for your kids after you pass on.
Absolutely, Jim. So your comment prompts some planning. So I often use an example. So I have three children. I've got a daughter and two sons. So my daughter is a school teacher. She married a school teacher. My other two sons, they're making tons of money. So maybe what I do is I leave a lot of my IRA accounts to the school teacher, daughter, and husband or son-in-law because they're in a low tax bracket. And they won't be as impacted by taking the account out at the end of 10 years. Maybe I leave my real estate and my regular brokerage account to my other two kids. You're going to have to rethink all this planning. And of course, as we're going to talk about, I think, a little bit, we're thinking a lot about future tax rates too.
And that's what I want to cover next. We had a tax law that was passed, went into effect in 2018. But Chris, we know without anything else, it's going to sunset in 2025 and go back to the way it was prior to the passage of this bill. The other thing that's coming up is we have a presidential election, and we don't know what the outcome of the election is going to be. And so how does one plan when, number one, the current bill sunsets, and number two, it could change radically as a result of the November elections?
Yeah, so my thinking, let's take those one by one. So I think, first of all, you're correct. The way the legislation is designed, assuming Trump is reelected, then his tax act, Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, that the Republicans passed, for the most part, expires at the end of 2025. We go back, therefore, to where we were in 2017, which means everyone has a tax increase. That's possibility number one. That's just political. Let's see what happens at the election. Now, possibility number two is that the Democrats come into power. A lot of people just said discounted. Oh, Trump's going to win. Well, and how you plan, I don't know. I mean, I think you need to think about scenarios. I think there is some planning to be done.
The other thing that strikes me, Chris, and this was eliminated under Ronald Reagan, but by getting rid of the step up, and I want to explain that to our clients, that if, let's say you buy a piece of real estate, it's worth $100,000, and at death, it's worth $1 million. Well, that $1 million could be subject to estate taxes, depending on the size of your estate, in which case you would have to pay estate taxes. Well, before the step up, you would have to sell the asset to pay the estate taxes, but then you would also have capital gains taxes. So
yeah,
you'd have two taxes. Yeah, so they got rid of that and allowed the step up, which means whatever the value was at death, if you could sell it, there would be no capital gains. So if you were subject to tax, you would only pay the estate tax. Getting rid of the step up, we go back to double taxation, just like double taxation of dividends.
That's exactly right. I mean, the view has always been if you eliminate step up, you have to eliminate the estate tax along with it. And that actually happened, you know, 2010, that strange year when there was no estate tax, there was no step up either that year. So that is consistent thinking. You know, let's talk a little bit about planning. So one interesting thing would be if we think the individual tax rate's going to be higher in the future, and also our kids under current law, I mean, this is already law, the Secure Act, our kids are going to have to take down the IRA account or even the Roth IRA or a retirement account at the end of 10 years, then I would be thinking more seriously about the Roth conversion. In other words, taking a current individual retirement account and saying, okay, the account's worth $200,000, let's convert that to a Roth. Maybe not all at once. Maybe we do $20,000 a year for 10 years because that's going to make sense if tax rates in the future are higher. And I think they will be higher. In fact, the Washington Post had an article that the effective tax rate today is lower than it was in the 1970s and 80s. I think rates are only going to go up. Even if Trump is reelected, we know they're going to go up in 2026. So I think you've got to, the listeners have to think more carefully about, all right, how do I make that account tax-free? So yeah, my kids have to take it out at the end of the 10th year, but they're taking it out tax-free.
You know, we are doing a lot of this right now because that's the way we see things. I can't see, you know, even if Trump gets reelected and we avoid this, my goodness, multitude of different taxes that they want to propose, one needs to start looking at this because in planning, Chris, you've seen this, the typical thing is, well, if you can defer paying the taxes until you retire, theoretically, you're going to be in a lower tax bracket. But if taxes are likely to go up, which I think they are, that might not be the correct strategy to use, the one you're referring to, converting it to a tax-free Roth. Let me ask you this. What are the chances are they could even renege on part of the Roth? Because you remember at one time, and people say, oh, no, they wouldn't do that. Well, let's go back to Social Security. It was tax-free. Then they made 50% taxable. Then it's 85. Governments can change their mind on what they give you, they can take away. So,
absolutely. And that question I get a lot from both financial advisors and when I give my talks to clients across the country. So, there's kind of three things that I would mention. One, okay, let's go back to my example. We do a $200,000 Roth conversion, and the Roth account grows to $500,000. Under the Constitution, you can't tax the $200,000 again. But what you could do is you pull money out of the Roth is tax the growth of in my example, $300,000. Or you could tax some of that growth. So 60% is growth. So you could say, all right, you take $1,000 out, $600 is taxed due. Now, that's an extreme measure, but Congress could do that. The second thing, which I think is much easier to do, right now, if I own a Roth IRA, I don't have to take any money out of it. There's no required minimum distribution. When my kids inherit it, they do, this 10-year clock that I just mentioned. So what if Congress suddenly said, oh, at age 72, because remember the age has now changed to 72, you've got to start pulling money out of that account. Now, many people say, well, of course, what difference does it make? It's coming out tax-free. Ah, but the point is it's going into a taxable account, and that taxable account's going to generate income and revenue to the government. And the third thing that could happen, the so-called backdoor Roth, and we can get into that if you want, Jim, but I think that could be outlawed. That's a way for people that make a lot of income to be able to actually contribute to a Roth IRA. So I think those things could all happen.
Let's talk about the backdoor Roth because we use it at our firm for our employees, and we're using it in planning with a lot of our private business owners. Let's explain that for our listeners.
All right, sure. So normally under the tax laws, you can contribute $6,000 to a Roth, or actually $7,000 if you're 50 or older. However, if your income, let's just take married, your income is between $196,000 and $206,000, that ability to put the six or seven in gets phased out. In fact, over $206,000, you can't put one dime in. So here's the strategy. You set up what's called a non-deductible IRA. So it's after-tax money that goes into it. It's not a Roth account. It's a non-deductible IRA. And the reason you do so is because there are no income phase-out limits on that account. And then you simply change the title of that account to a Roth, and now you have your Roth IRA. Be careful if you do this. There is something called aggregation rules. So in my example, let's say I'm putting $6,000 into the non-deductible account, but I have $94,000 of other in value of other IRA accounts. 94% of the $6,000 is going to be income to me in my return for that year. But at least I get my Roth set up. So that's the backdoor, Jim. And although the legislation has never said it's legal, interestingly, in the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, in the conference agreement report, they say it's legal and it works. But like you said, they could take that away.
And what about those individuals that have a company that has a 401k program using the backdoor Roth with that, which gets around those income limits?
Right. So one of the things I talk about is I call it the mega Roth. But basically what it is, a lot more companies are offering a 401k Roth option or after-tax money into your 401k plan. So the maximum deferred contribution right now for an individual is $19,500. But of course, with matching, let's say with matching from the company, you get up to $25,000. So $25,000 is in the plan. Well, you can go all the way up to $57,000. So 57 less 25, you can put another $32,000 in. That's after tax, no tax deduction, but it goes in there, and then eventually that amount could be converted into a Roth. Now, you got to have the cash flow, Jim, obviously, to do this, but for people that have significant or sufficient cash flow, that's a good strategy. And I think something like, maybe 55 to 60% of all companies are now offering a after-tax 401k or Roth option.
We know that, for example, if we're in a recession or a bear market, that isn't good for any incumbent. We're really in sort of a precarious position right now in the sense that we don't know what the outcome is going to be. That's number one. Number two, we know it changes in 25 anyway. So what would you be telling clients to do with this kind of uncertainty where the election can go in either direction,
sure,
other than the fact that we talked about maybe it'd make a lot more sense to start doing Roth conversions, because we do believe, I think both of you and I agree, that in this decade, we're going to more likely see tax rates go up.
Yeah, so I think that there's that answer. But I also think that, and I'm not an investment professional, more of a tax person, but I think it's always the same answer to me. You've got to be diversified, and these companies aren't going to go out of business. I mean, Apple and Google are not going to go out of business. Tesla's not going to go out of business. The oil companies won't go out of business. People need to eat. They need to buy cars. They need to buy gasoline. So we'll get through this eventually. We got through 9/11. I remember that very well. And it's just a question of now politically, this, as you said, Jim, this could hurt Trump, because already, of course, the Democrats are blaming Trump. The media is blaming Trump. It's his fault. The virus is his fault. And on the other hand, I think if he handles it with leadership, maybe it actually in some ways helps him. But your point, Jim, is correct. It's a very difficult. People are fearful of the unknown. And as Roosevelt said, nothing to fear but fear itself.
Well, I can tell you, when you're looking at this, you know, that's one of the things I think, Chris, we can take a look at. If you take a look at going back to the turn of the century, Bush came in. We were in a recession. He had one tax act. It didn't work.
Yeah.
Came in with another one. It worked. But then it sunset.
Correct, yep.
Obama came in when we were in a recession. Yeah. He said, okay, I'm going to hold off. But then he raised taxes, and then there were additional taxes that came in with Medicare. And then, of course, the Republicans come in, and we change it. So we have had more tax law changes, I think, in my career the last two decades than the first two decades of my career. I mean, Ronald Reagan came in. He lowered taxes. Bush Sr., read my lips, he raised them a bit. Bill Clinton raised them. But that was basically it. It was we sort of had stability. Yeah. And you and I know, Chris, one thing the markets love and things that you love in the business, people like certainty. And I would say right now we are in a period of high uncertainty. And that is something.
Yeah. No, that's right, Jim. I guess the other thing, it's kind of basic, but it's worth talking about, is just the listeners getting together with a financial advisor, their financial advisor, and talking about this and running scenarios. Take the Roth conversion, for example. You can run different scenarios on what your future tax rate would be. When is it going to make sense to do the Roth conversion? Generally going to make sense if your marginal rate in the futures, or today, I should say, is 24% or less, and you think it's going to be higher than that in the future. But I think if you see different scenarios, and you say, all right, well, I understand that. I'm willing to do that. I'm more conservative. I'm willing to do this. I think you feel a little bit better because you're actually doing some planning, even though you're not certain what's going to happen.
You know, this is something we're doing with our high-end clients that are possible in those high tax brackets and are heading into retirement. But, you know, it's also good, too, because we're doing multiple investment scenarios, tax scenarios.
Yeah. Right.
The good thing about doing that, Chris, as you mentioned, is at least you'll know, okay, if this does happen, this is what it looks like for me. This is how it'll impact me versus having no plan and then getting a surprise. The reason I mentioned that, there were a lot of people in my own state of California, states like New York, that got hit with actually higher taxes because they lost the SALT deductions, and that came as a surprise to many of them.
Yeah, yeah. Even though if they were in the alternative tax, they weren't able to deduct the state income tax anyway. And, you know, the other thing that's interesting, Jim, is something like this, and you and I have talked about this before on the show, something like this, people rethink their domicile, where they're going to live. And you've seen that. I know you've seen it in California, people leaving. I see it on the East Coast. I spend January through March in Florida. And everyone I meet down there, well, they're domiciled there. They spend 7 months there. They've gotten out of New York and New Jersey and Connecticut and Massachusetts. So they're rethinking their overall tax situation, including state income taxes and to some extent real estate taxes.
You know, it's amazing. I would say, Chris, probably 40% of our clients who have done well in California, they're getting near retirement. I would say close to 40% of them are changing domicile. Most of ours are going either to Nevada or Arizona. We have a few that have gone to Texas. Yeah. But I would say for Californians, you know, it's kind of like East Coast, you go to Florida. If you're on the West Coast, you go to Nevada, Arizona. Or, you know, very few go to Washington State just because of the weather.
Yeah, sure. Exactly. Yep. Well, California, you certainly pay a tax for that weather. So,
oh, my goodness, 13.3 in Lincoln. And Chris, every single year they're coming up with a new one. It's a gas tax. It's a utility tax. It's a tire tax, computer tax. I mean, if it walks, moves, breathes, they tax it.
So,
I know.
Good way to put it.
So, listen, as we conclude, I guess one thing that you need to be aware of is this SECURE Act. And this really applies to those of you listening that have large IRAs or potential large 401k programs. You need to take a look at this, how this is going to impact your heirs. That's something that I think requires planning. And I think you would agree with me. You should be doing some planning if you're fortunate enough to either be in a high tax bracket or fortunate enough to have accumulated substantial assets.
Yes, absolutely, Jim. I think that's great advice.
Well, Chris, as we close, if our listeners like to follow your work, you put out some great stuff on taxes, by the way.
Yes, Jim. So there's a website anyone can go to, Putnam Wealth Management, all one word, P-U-T-N-A-M, Wealth Management, all one word, .com. You just go into that and you can see all the stuff we have.
All right. Well, Chris, as always, it's a pleasure to have you on the program. Great stuff. I appreciate you updating our clients on the SECURE Act. All the best to you, sir.
Thanks, Jim, very much. Good night now.
All right. Bye-bye. That concludes my interview with Chris Hennessy. Once again, he's a CPA attorney. And you know, this is, as Chris pointed out, one of those years where we're going to be in a transition. And quite honestly, forget the public opinion polls. That can change every month. It can change the day before the election. I mean, nobody thought Donald Trump was going to be president. So we're in a situation where we know the tax laws are going to expire and sunset in 2025, or they could change as a result of this year's election. Do yourself a favor. Call your advisor, or better yet, give us a call. And you can do that at 888-486-3939. I'm Jim Poplava. Thanks for listening.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.